Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's SmackDown Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing this week's SmackDown live at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, you can always hit us up in the chat room. We'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. A lot to get to this week, folks. The go-home show for SmackDown. Of course, SmackDown always has the advantage of having that go-home show for pay-per-views they're going to be involved in, which going forward, apparently, are all of them. And I guess if you tuned in to our Monday Night Raw report, you know I was extraordinarily unhappy. And I was in the minority, by the way. Extraordinarily unhappy with Monday Night Raw. Not just because The Undertaker didn't show up and it felt very bait and switch on the fans that were there, but because I just don't think they were giving any effort. And before we delve in to what I think about SmackDown this week, which, to tip my hand a little bit, it was better. We do have a couple of news items to get to. First off, I've had a ton of people writing to me saying, is The Undertaker going to be there? Is The Undertaker going to be there? Is this WrestleMania match on? Well, I can't get confirmation that the WrestleMania match is on, but I can get confirmation that The Undertaker is going to be there. So if The Undertaker is there, then he's not there to, you know, sit at catering and watch the matches. So I assume the match is on. But there is one more theory, and that theory is that perhaps The Undertaker is not there to wrestle. Perhaps The Undertaker is there to begin a push that could last as long as 1 year to next year's WrestleMania to fight John Cena. That seems unlikely. To me, that seems unlikely, but look, anything's possible. They did a 1 year build with Cena and The Rock, if you remember. But The Undertaker is going to be at WrestleMania. So, I mean, you know, Derek in the chat room is saying, well, it's probably going to be the American Badass. Well, it's still The Undertaker. You know, he can say, he can call himself what he wants. The American Badass is the descript for the Undertaker's other persona, but he's still called The Undertaker. And to be honest, you know, that could tie in with the whole Kid Rock thing. I don't know. We'll see what ends up happening. I do know this. I think the WWE wrongfully thought all of this bait and switch was going to lead to anticipation of, oh my God, when it finally happens. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think it's going to be the, oh yeah, okay, now you're going to do it for the pay-per-view crowd, for the people who spent the big money on the WrestleMania tickets. And, you know, we'll see how that works out. But before we delve into SmackDown, a couple of things we got to get into. And one is I've had a couple of people write me asking me my opinion on the Disco Inferno Cody Rhodes war on Twitter. And for the people who don't know what happened, Cody Rhodes had posted a picture of himself busted open from a match he'd had in Japan. The Disco Inferno tweeted, this is the problem, and I'm paraphrasing, no wrestlers know how to work these days. They just go out and kill themselves so that Dave Meltzer can give them a 5-star match. And this is why everyone's getting injured. And this is something that needs to be addressed because, you know, people are going to keep right on getting injured. Cody Rhodes then went berserk and basically buried the Disco Inferno by saying, look, you need to shut up. No one ever paid a dime to see you. You never accomplished anything in the business. You can't get booked. You're like, you know, low man on the totem pole screaming at people how things should be done when you have no idea how anything should be done. So people have written me saying, what side are you on? Because I know you've said, you know, old school versus new school. Well, here's the side I'm on. The Disco Inferno, in some ways, is correct. He's not correct when it comes to Cody Rhodes. Blood was blood long before Cody Rhodes ever got busted open in Japan. Okay? Go to a flea market sometime and find some old 70s and 80s wrestling magazines, and you'll see the front covers are loaded with guys bleeding half to death. So this is nothing new. And I grew up in the era of ECW where, you know, listen, those guys were taking major chances and they were taking major bumps for the crowd. Here's what he is right about, though. The vast majority of the younger wrestlers who are just now starting their career do not know how to work. I'm not saying all of them. I'm saying a good majority of them. And not because of blood, not because they got busted open hard way, but because they take chances for no reason. They take chances that doesn't add anything to the match other than a oh my God moment, which is 47 times in a match. And then it loses the oh my God moment feel because every move is an oh my God moment. Now Conan weighed in on this and said, oh man, you're like an old man saying get off my lawn. This is not the way they work today. Okay, Conan, well, just because it's not the way they work today doesn't mean it's the right way. Doesn't mean it's the right way. It doesn't mean it's progress. And then he went on to say something really asinine, which I would really take offense to, and he said, not every match needs to tell a story. That's a direct quote from Conan. Really? Not every match needs to tell a story? Then what the fuck is it? Two guys doing acrobatics. Like I said, performing chimpanzees, that's what it is then? And you're okay with that? Doesn't need to tell a story, folks. He did a plancha moonsault. He did a triple corkscrew plancha on the outside. What story do you need? He's an acrobat. Story do you need? They just did a death-defying move. Now tell me why they did the death-defying move. They did that death-defying move because they wanted a reaction from the audience. Why could they not get that reaction from the audience without doing a death-defying move? Because there's no story! But the rocket scientist known as Conan says, oh, you don't need a story. Okay, then you don't. I just won't come see your federation because I will be bored to tears. Now, Cody Rhodes is right when he says, look, people have taken these kind of bumps before the Disco Inferno ever laced up a pair of wrestling boots, and that's absolutely correct. And Cody Rhodes certainly knows how to tell a story, and he certainly knows how to work. Nobody's going to argue that point. So I think the Disco Inferno's tweet was probably misguided to the wrong thing. In other words, I think he saw Cody's picture and he thought it was a chance to give his overall general idea, but he picked the wrong guy. He picked the wrong guy. Because to say what he said on Cody's feed about Cody's picture, that doesn't really apply. I don't care how good of a wrestler you are, at some point you're probably going to get busted open. It just happens. And that doesn't mean you don't know how to work. Now let's take a look at Will Ospreay, who damn near killed himself. That, I would say, he has a point. Why did you do that move? It didn't end well, did it? For a moment there, you had your career in your hands. And for why? For that 1 second of crowd pop that people would say, oh, that was cool. Now, before you say, well, you know, that's being hypocritical because you loved it when New Jack dove off the balcony in a bingo hall in South Philly. Yeah. But there was a story behind it. There was a reason why he had to do it. I am not against taking risks. I am not against taking high risk chances in a wrestling match because, after all, that's part of the game. What I am against is when it becomes a substitute for a story, or it becomes a substitute for, I have no other way to get the crowd into the palm of my hand. Now, New Jack could tell a story, and New Jack would come in there and just pound and kick and pound and kick and pound and kick and get a reaction. But every once in a while, ECW knew, okay, the fans are going to get this one big, hellacious, hair-raising, death-defying thing, and they got it. But they didn't get it seven times a match. And I think it's replacing storytelling. See, that's the problem. And it doesn't need to replace storytelling. Ric Flair once said, and he was absolutely correct, I can get the same reaction from a crowd chopping somebody in the chest as one of these new guys gets from doing a move that could end his career. So who's working smart and who's working stupid? Now, I'm not saying you should never do these moves. I'm saying there's really no point in saying, I'll do a flip and then you do a flip, and then I'll do a flip and then you do a flip, and then I'll climb up on something higher and do a flip, and then you climb up on something higher yet and do a flip, and then we'll do a flip over the guardrail, and then let's do one on the concrete, and then, okay, where's the story? It's all just flips. So I don't know.
You know, think about it this way. I mean, it is probably the wrong guy to go after because Cody has been taught the right way to do things. And look, how many times have we seen throughout the past either his dad or Ric Flair on the cover of one of these magazines bleeding like a stuck pig, you know? How many times, you know? And neither one of those two guys were known for being high flyers, you know. And he actually worked with both of those two guys, the Disco Inferno. So I don't know if he has any room to talk. He might be right in some cases, but not when he's talking to Cody. And look, we've seen other wrestlers do exactly what Cody did, you know, posting himself bleeding, or in the case of Cesaro posting a picture of himself without his teeth, or I believe The Miz did the same thing, you know, when he got his tooth knocked out or something. So we've seen wrestlers do this stuff, and nobody's gotten on them for doing this same type of stuff that Cody did. So,
no, I agree with you, and that's what I said. You can't. I think the Disco Inferno pulled the wrong person to chastise. And I don't think it was well thought out, but I do think it was well intentioned. I think what he was trying to say is you cannot grow up thinking, well, this is the right way to do a wrestling match. If you're 13, 14, 15, and then you get to be 18, you go to a wrestling school and you're taught, yes, the first thing we're going to teach you how to do is, you know, a plancha and a suicide dive and a triple body moonsault and a corkscrew and this. Why? The first thing you need to teach people to do, aside from the basics, is to get the crowd to the palm of their hand any way they can. And Ric Flair could do it by just chopping somebody in the chest and going, woo. He's right. Cactus Jack, he went to the extreme. But it's not necessarily wrong, Todd. I mean, each person has their own style, but your style shouldn't be suicidal to the point where it's shortening your career either.
You're absolutely right there. They got their own opinions on what they think about the styles and everything. Like Disco Inferno has his opinion, Cody Rhodes has his own opinion, Conan. It's their own opinions what they think.
Yeah, I mean, to an extent, you have to have differing styles. And again, high flyers don't bother me. High flyers been around forever. Hardcore guys don't bother me. They've been around forever. But please tell the story along with it, because if you don't, it feels to me like you're doing it for no other reason than, well, I have nothing. You know what I mean? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Anyway, let's get – by the way, Derek in the chat room is saying that he watched Conan's Federation's already, out the door. Listen. Conan's a legend. I respect Conan, but there's a lot of crap that comes out of his mouth that's just exactly that. It's just crap. And to sit there and say every match doesn't need to tell a story is like saying every movie doesn't need to have a plot. A match is a mini movie. It's nothing else. And if you think of it as anything else, you are thinking wrong. If you're a young wrestler listening to this show and you were saying, no, my match is about me getting my moves in and getting this high spot in that I'm going to do and then making the crowd pop. And no, your job is to create a little mini movie. And if you're not creating a little mini movie with your moves, you're thinking wrong. You're a short story. Tell that story. And don't let Conan tell you don't need to tell a story. Just do a triple moonsault, plancha, corkscrew, dive on the concrete through a table on fire. Well, okay, go ahead. And when your career ends at 21, then you can ask Conan for a loan. Here's the deal. You're talking to a guy who did a lot of hardcore stuff. Okay? Todd, you can bear witness to some of the hardcore things that I've put my body through, but did I ever not tell a story doing it?
You're absolutely right there. I've seen you do the hardcore stuff in the past. And like you said, it's all part of a storyline.
It's okay to take a risk. If it's part of the story and you've captivated the audience, you made that audience go, not just, oh, that was a cool move, but, oh, no, I think he's hurt and I don't want him to be hurt. Or, oh, good, that guy got clobbered finally. That's part of the storytelling process. To get that audience to suspend their disbelief and say, I don't care what anybody says, that freaking hurt. I see the blood. I see the barbed wire. I see the glass. All that's fine. And you're taking a risk in doing it, but you're doing it to further a storyline. It's almost like a fight scene in a movie. If you just have a movie and you say, okay, well, there's a fight scene in it, but nobody knows who the guys are, they're just fighting. It could be a really good fight scene, but if you don't care about who's fighting, why do you care to watch it? First, you introduce the characters and you get the idea behind why they're fighting, and then when they fight, you're like, oh, this is important to the plot of the movie. But according to Conan, it's not. It's okay. Just hire two guys to fight, and you don't need to explain who they are or why they're fighting. We can just have a movie called Bar Fight where random guys just fight each other in a bar, and you don't know who they are. Because that's such a good idea. Anyway, let's get to SmackDown. Listen, SmackDown this week was better. Anything was better than Raw. Which I had a million and one problems with, as you know. If you tuned into the show, you heard me scream and yell and holler. And a lot of people said I went too far. A lot of people said it wasn't as bad as I said. Believe me, I could do a whole nother show on why that's not true. But this week, they tried to improve things a little bit. Daniel Bryan came out. He gave a pretty good speech. Now, they wrapped up the Daniel Bryan-Shane McMahon angle as far as I know. Maybe they got something big planned at WrestleMania, like Shane turns on Daniel. I don't know. But as far as I know, they're wrapping it up. And they kind of wrapped it up in a weird way where Daniel Bryan says, oh, you know what, you were right. They're lunkheads, they're idiots, and I was a moron for trusting them. And you're right, I was, you know, everything you said, Shane was right. And Shane says, no, I was probably a little too hard on them, but now you see their true colors. And they hug it out. Shane McMahon forgot his lines halfway through the thing, but Daniel Bryan brought him back to square one with it. It was a little long, but it worked, and I think it got the crowd into it. Now, having said that, before we discuss anything else, I'm going to jump ahead to this because Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn cut what I consider to be the best heel promo in the WWE in 5 years. This is exactly the way a heel promo is supposed to be. This is exactly the way a heel promo is supposed to be. There's not one person that I know of. Nobody was cheering him. Nobody was saying, yeah, right on. You guys are right. You guys are right on the money. Yes, you know, what you're saying is righteous. Preach on, brother. Most people are saying, ah, these guys are full of shit. All right, these guys are idiots. And I thought Sami Zayn came off as they work very well together because they're not the same kind of heel. Kevin Owens is that dead serious. He gets into like a violent rage sort of a heel. And Sami Zayn is more of the extraordinarily annoying, cocky, irritating heel. And the two of them together work very, very well. So let's just discuss that, because in my opinion, Mike, this is probably WrestleMania's main event. They're not going to make it the main event, but to me, it's the main event.
Yeah, well, you would say that, but to me, you can go either way, either this one or the tag team match with the Usos and those people will be the main event. But yeah, you're right. Me, they remind me of what the WWE had when formerly the WWF had when both Anderson and Tully Blanchard came in. And while they work so well as a tag team, is because Anderson was this no nonsense guy that, and then we know what Tully Blanchard's thing had been for years. He was a super brat, you know. He was this guy that you wanted to see get punched in the face, you know. That's who Tully Blanchard was, and that's what Sami Zayn is right now. He's that guy that you want to see get punched in the face.
No question. They did an excellent job. There's absolutely no question about it. I was very happy with their job. Now let's skip to a couple of things that I thought really was pointless. Having Natty once again fight Charlotte. I understand the concept behind this is to kind of get Carmella over, because Natty fought Charlotte before, and because of Carmella attempting to cash in, Charlotte lost, which I think was a horribly stupid thing before WrestleMania match with Asuka, but okay. They're trying to get Carmella in the mix, saying she can cause things to happen that wouldn't normally happen, I guess. She does it again, only this time it doesn't work, and Natty gets the loss. I'm not sure where this is going, because she's not cashing in on Asuka, and she's not cashing in on Charlotte either. And if she, I mean, she may cash in, she's not winning. So I'm not really sure where this is going. And I think it's kind of pointless. Now, did they have a good match? Yes. These two girls work very well together, and I'm not really sure why you don't. Someone should be there taking notes. You know what I'm saying? You should have a guy backstage saying, look, this girl and this girl, or this guy and this guy, despite the fact that they are both very good wrestlers, don't really work that well together. So there's no real point in putting them in long-term matches, because it's not going to come out well. On the other hand, there should be that same thing of, you know what? These two work very well together. And due to the fact that they work very well together, let's create a storyline around them for the next month or two that we can get a lot of really good quality matches out of them. That's what you would think would be normal. Natty and Charlotte deserve better. Natty and Charlotte deserve this big program together, and they're not going to get it now because they've had it a million times on TV. When you have these matches on TV, it's hard to make them special anymore. Oh, I've already seen Natty pin Charlotte. I've already seen Charlotte pin Natty. 50-50 booking. It's no big deal. Whereas you probably could have got something more out of it, and that's the story of this week's SmackDown, is there's so many things you could have got more out of. But let's stick with this one for a minute, Mike. These two girls work very well together, and it's kind of a shame that we're not going to see a longer program with them.
Right. It's almost to the point with these two girls that we were watching. They if you put them in the ring a number of times, they could probably get to the point of where The Miz and Ziggler were, where we were saying we could watch that matchup 100 times, because we would see them get to the end result in different ways, you know. And this is where I feel like if they'd done this thing right, this is where I feel like Natty and Charlotte could have been right now, you know, where we're saying, oh, we can watch these two girls fight 100 times, you know, and we see something different every time.
Yeah. They work well together. when you get a chemistry like that in the ring, it's always good to exploit it. And sometimes the WWE is guilty of doing the exact opposite. They find girls who work well in the ring and they don't exploit it. And then in favor of people who don't work so well in the ring and they try to exploit it. Overall, good match. But again, I don't understand the ending. I don't know what it takes to cash in. Okay, you can kick it out of her hand and that's not good. She brought her own referee down. So, you know, like I said, what do you got to do? Have it sealed, stamped by Vince McMahon personally that it's cashed in? I mean, you know, as far as I'm concerned, she's cashed in like four times. So it's a little bizarre. And it's going to end at WrestleMania. There's no question about it. So I don't know why we're taking up TV time with the nonsense. You may as well let it have been a surprise or whatever. Likewise, I could not believe they gave away Rusev versus Jinder Mahal. This is the lack of foresight. Fans are thinking to themselves, I wonder if Rusev is going to win the Intercontinental or the U.S. belt. Or I wonder if they'll give it to Jinder, because we kind of know it's not going to go to Root or Orton. It's very unlikely. Wonder which one of those guys are going to get it, because you could do it both ways. You could have Jinder win and then Rusev chase, or you could have Rusev win and Jinder try to, you know, chase with the rest of the people. And they gave it away. They've given it away. A program that you could have gotten these guys a month and a half to 2 months worth of work out of, you gave away for free on SmackDown with a solid ending, with a clean pin. And I just don't get it. I don't get why that's a good idea. You could have had Randy Orton interfere and nobody won. He's going to give an RKO to everybody anyway. How about he just gets in there and RKOs them before anybody wins? That way we're left in limbo. But when Rusev clean pins Jinder Mahal, then you're like, well, I don't want to see the match again. Culmination of their feud, there was no feud. Could we not have had, at least until WrestleMania, could we not have had that? Could we have had something weird? Could we have had maybe Rusev has to team with one of them to fight the opposite one, you know, instead of Rusev and Jinder Mahal this week? Maybe it could have been Rusev and Rude and Orton and Mahal, which would have been really tumultuous. That would have been cool. And then just a melee or something that doesn't tip the hat or give things away. And unfortunately, Mike, they do that too often.
Yeah, I mean, heck, you know, you could have even had, instead of those two guys, you could have even had Singh brother number one, as it's Neil or whatever, and Rusev's guy, Aiden English, in a tag team match. I mean, one of those two guys take the loss, and then you're still questioning who's going to win the match, because neither one of those guys won the match and took the loss. But, there are different ways to get to the same result. And we've been screaming for this feud for how long, but they give it away.
They gave it away. They literally gave it away with a clean ending. That's the thing that gets me. If you're teasing the feud and there's no clean ending, okay. But you gave it away. So how are fans supposed to be excited about, oh, we're going to see Rusev and Jinder Mahal, and this could be a barn burner because they were tag team partners and they didn't like each other, and then this happened and that happened? Well, we've seen Rusev clean pin Jinder Mahal. I know the new booking is 50-50. He could pin next week after WrestleMania. Mahal could pin Rusev. I don't like that kind of booking, Todd. I would rather have seen them whet our appetite for a future feud.
You're absolutely right there. I like the old booking, too, and I just don't like this new booking either. It's confusing every week.
It really is. It's confusing of why you'd give away things you could make money on. I don't know. Anyway, it was a good match. I mean, again, a lot of these matches were fine. It's just the psychology of why the WWE does what they do sometimes bothers me. And then we're told, okay, well, here's what we're going to have. We're going to have a sort of a warm-up to the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal by having a couple of teams. All these guys are going to be in the Battle Royal. And man, did they really bring out the guns. Okay, you got Ty Dillinger, you got Primo. I didn't even know Primo was still in the Federation until I saw him. I don't know where Epico is, but Primo was there. And in the mix is Baron Corbin. How far has this man fallen? And Dolph Ziggler. And you're just like, wow, man. It was stunning. It was stunning. If you're Dolph Ziggler and Baron Corbin and you're in that kind of match, I know you're the star power, and I get it, but it almost feels like you're being relegated to their undercard. You know, it felt weird, Mike.
Yeah, if I'm Dolph Ziggler, I'm pissed off, and I'm saying, look, you just paid me $2 million or whatever it was. You just gave me a ton of money. Why are you using me this way? You know?
It's weird. I don't know. They can use them any way they want, I guess. They paid, but you would think you would want to get the most out of everybody you could. At least that's what I would do. Use that moment to say, okay, well, there's some heat between these two guys. There's going to be a problem. Maybe at the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. We didn't even really get that. We kind of just got a mishmash of, I don't know what it was. There was one cool spot where everybody like was getting tossed out and stuff, but it didn't do much for me. And then we're told that it's going to be AJ Styles and Nakamura against Gable and Benjamin. Benjamin Gable, whichever you want to do. And I knew that was going to be a solid match. But at least in this respect, the WWE showed that they had a little bit of wherewithal when it comes to the psychology of making the match a little more interesting. I wasn't overly interested in the story that was being told. I was interested in the match, but I wasn't overly interested in the story that was being told between Styles and Nakamura. Just, I'm going to knee you to the face. It took a different turn last week when Nakamura threatened the knee to the face and then patted AJ Styles on the head, which is pretty humiliating. And AJ Styles, by the way, this week did a good job of saying, look, that's humiliating. I didn't appreciate it. I know what Nakamura's trying to do. He's trying to get in my head. I get it, but this isn't Japan. And then this week, AJ Styles does the exact same thing, leaving Nakamura kind of furious. By the way, Nakamura, a lot of people got on him for the promo that he cut, saying why. And I agree. Some people said, why couldn't he just do it in his native language and you put subtitles on the screen, since you're more than happy to pop up those giant letters when people are speaking English? And I agree to an extent. But you know what? He didn't do a bad job overall with his English. I understood him perfectly, and I thought he did okay. So I think, if anything, SmackDown added a little bit to that match, Mike.
It really did. And look, I've always said this. I mean, you know, one of the tricks is to have the guys come out and commentate the other guy's match, you know, or whatever, you know. And I'd like to see one day one of these foreign guys sit. We know that they have all these other tables, you know, the Japanese announce team and the Spanish announce team and all this stuff. I like to see one of the guys like Nakamura sit down at the Japanese announce table and then let the Japanese guys do the match in Japanese with the subtitles. That would be interesting, you know. That would be cool. And look, I kind of like the story that was told in this match. And of course, we know what's happening there, and we know what they're trying to do is to make this thing a WrestleMania moment match. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's one of these things where it probably should have been last year, or maybe even the next year. You know. Where they could have built it up a little bit more in terms of this match. Now, I don't know if he's going to be around too much longer, how much longer, not AJ, but Nakamura is going to be around after WrestleMania. I don't know his contract, and also maybe building it up for the next WrestleMania might have been out of the question because of the contract situation. But, I mean, it's not like you couldn't re-sign him, you know, to do that.
Well, what I do know is this. It could have been a much better match if they took care of both guys a little better. I mean, Nakamura went on a losing streak there for a while. He lost 2-3 matches to Jinder Mahal. He lost a couple other matches. It was like, wow, okay, you know, there goes Nakamura's mystique of being nearly undefeatable down the drain. And, you know, AJ Styles went on a losing streak where he lost to Finn Balor and he lost to Brock Lesnar. And you were like, wow, okay. So, yeah, we've seen them guys beaten a lot. The new philosophy in wrestling, by the way, and I don't know, you know, maybe you like it, maybe you don't. The new philosophy in wrestling is very few, if any, people are unbeatable or extraordinarily hard to beat. It's almost like they're trying to say on any given night, the vast majority of our workers could beat anybody else on the roster. And to prove it, this guy wins 1 week. This guy wins the next week. This guy loses the next week. This guy wins the next week. Everybody's 50-50. And what they're thinking is that if we do that and everybody's sort of 50-50, it's harder for you to figure out who's going to win. But in reality, it's not harder for us to figure out who's going to win because of the way you pushed the match. So since it's not really harder, I would go back to the old way, where there are certain guys built up for a while who are fairly hard to beat, and you don't see them lose much, such as Braun Strowman, such as Brock Lesnar, such as Roman Reigns, such as, you know, whoever, John Cena. Then it's more interesting to see, and you cycle them down after a while. They lose a couple matches, then you cycle them down, then you build them back up slowly. Instead, the WWE just goes with this 50-50 thing. Nakamura wins some, Nakamura loses some. He won again, he lost again. He won again, he lost again. He lost, he lost, he lost. All right, well, now let's have him win a few and set him up for a big match. Well, but he's coming off losses to do that. That's a problem. They almost think they can set this up in a month, whereas it would be much better and the fans would forget those losses maybe in 6 months, 8 months, but not in a month. You know, not in 1 or 2 months. It would be like if right now Baron Corbin goes on a tear and you're like, Baron Corbin is now going to fight AJ Styles. Can he ever defeat Baron Corbin? Well, the answer is yes, because he's beaten him how many times? And we remember that. See, that's where the problem lies when you do this 50-50 booking. Now, I had some questions. Some people wrote me in and I said I would answer them today. And one of them concerned me talking about how John Cena had said he would – remember, he's SmackDown guy too. And John Cena said he'd be taking a spot away from someone if he just went into the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. And I had said, is there a finite number of people who can be in that Battle Royal? To my knowledge, there's no set number. It's not a Royal Rumble, so – I assume as many people as want can be in it. And would he not be taking a spot away from somebody if he had a match with The Undertaker? Of course he would be, a much longer spot. And people were saying, well, isn't that kind of what Ronda Rousey's doing? And the answer to that question is, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. Bayley and Sasha Banks, I want you to think about this for a minute. Bayley and Sasha Banks, who've worked their butt off all year, regardless of what you think of them, they've worked their butt off all year. Bayley's went through some horrid things, that really horrid things, horrid booking. Their involvement in WrestleMania is going to be a battle royal, while Ronda Rousey and Stephanie McMahon get the spotlight. So explain to me again why Ronda Rousey, Stephanie McMahon, Triple H, and Kurt Angle deserve that spot above Bayley and Sasha. Because Triple H runs the company? Because Kurt Angle's a bigger name years ago? Because Ronda Rousey has the UFC credibility behind her? And because Stephanie's married to Triple H? That's it. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. They don't deserve that spot. And I know there are people saying, but I want to see this match. Okay, that's cool because there's a story behind it. I get it. But in reality, they took a big spot away. Huge spot away. From people who deserve it. Right now, I don't even know what Elias is doing. And here's the thought. Braun Strowman, who has been their stellar guy all year long, is relegated to a tag team match. Elias, who has been red hot, and they were building him up just right. We don't even know what he's doing. I presume he's in the Battle Royal. So Stephanie McMahon and Triple H can get a spot. And Kurt Angle and Ronda Rousey. And to be honest, it's not like they did anything all year long to deserve it, Mike.
Right, and here's something else to think about. Before they even started to think about Ronda Rousey, you know, and bringing Kurt Angle back, what was the big thing? Especially after they had that match on, at that takeover, you know? Or was it in NXT or on NXT or on takeover with the with Sasha and Bayley? The big thing was everybody was saying, uh-oh, they're going to plan to put these two girls on a WrestleMania. And they're going to plan for it to probably be for the World Championship because they want to showcase these two girls. And that was everybody's thought that the plan was going to be until they got wind of, well, they're going to try and sign Ronda Rousey, you know. Then I think that's when that all went up in smoke. I mean, you can't argue that was the plan, right?
I guess, yeah. It seemed like that was the plan for a very, very long period of time, and they got bumped. It's like, well, we don't have enough room, so you'll just be in the Andre the Giant, women's battle royal, and then I guess your feud will continue from there. And really, I think it probably, and we'll talk about more about this on Sunday, but it probably undermines the women's battle royal because it makes you think, well, you know, these girls, it's going to come down to these girls probably. So anyway, back to SmackDown. The matches themselves were all fairly good, and even the segments that they shot, Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon, pretty good. Kevin Owens at the end with Sami Zayn, superb. Nakamura, who's getting a little bit of heat for his promo, I thought it was his best one. I thought he did fine. I liked it. AJ Styles, yeah, and Charlotte, oh boy, there's no chemistry there. But what are you going to do? All the matches were fine. The interest in Carmella's Money in the Bank briefcase has been gone for a very, very long time through no fault of her own. You hooked her up with James Ellsworth. That thing was hot, and then you pulled the plug on it because, of course, paying James Ellsworth, $50 a week is asking too much. It's asking too much. Then you kind of made her irrelevant, and she lost every match after the Money in the Bank briefcase. So it was like, well, I don't see her as the champion if she's dropping to every girl on the roster. And that made her sort of irrelevant. So right now, unfortunately, the Money in the Bank is absolutely irrelevant as far as I'm concerned. Absolutely irrelevant. And to an extent, Carmella's become irrelevant for holding it, and that's a shame because she was pretty hot at the time she won it. She had a lot of heat. She had a lot of momentum. And that was totally taken away. And once she cashes in at WrestleMania, believe me, she'll try. I don't know. I think that's it. You know, I don't see what they're going to do with her from there. How are you going to rebuild that? It's going to take a bit. Aside from that, it was a much better go-home show than Raw. I'm left scratching my head at the Rusev thing. I don't know why you'd give away Jinder Mahal versus Rusev when you could have waited till after WrestleMania and really made that a hot feud that fans would be, you know, chomping at the bit to see. I already told you my booking. My booking would have been that Jinder Mahal, through no effort of his own, not Rusev, either Randy Orton or Bobby Roode. Maybe Orton RKO somebody At the same time, Rusev gives them that Machka kick. They fall out of the ring, and Jinder Mahal just falls on Rude for the three count. Then you maybe could have a match between Rude and Mahal, maybe a short program between Rude and Mahal, or Orton and Mahal, very briefly, but all the while building up the Rusev thing until Rusev was once again really red hot, and he's red hot now. Make it really red hot and start really fanning the flames of a Rusev feud, and you'd have something pretty good. Now, we did have a bit of information come in on Rusev, but there's no actual confirmation of it. So take it with a grain of salt, but this is what we heard. We heard that Rusev, about a couple of months ago, I guess it was, the Rusev Day really started taking off and things were going well, Rusev asked for his release from the WWE, stating he did not feel he was being used well. And I think maybe it might have opened up the WWE's eyes, and they said, we're not letting this guy go because he's selling a ton of merchandise. So let's throw him in this match, and then he'll be happy, and that'll be fine. But unfortunately, the WWE usually gets their revenge somehow. So I don't know. I don't know if they'll let Rusev win it or not. I do know that as long as he keeps selling Rusev T-shirts, Rusev Day T-shirts, and these Rusev Day calendars that they're ordering in mass quantities where every day is Rusev Day on them, they're going to do something with them. They're not going to let them go. That's for sure. But whether he asks for his release or not, not really too sure. And the second thing that's kind of a bummer that has hit social media is that Dana White, who I guess is, you know, I thought he had a good relationship with Vince McMahon to some degree. I know they're rivals in a weird way, and sometimes it's like, we don't want you to use this guy unless you give us, you know, there's that. But Dana White just come right out and said, yeah, Brock Lesnar, we re-signed Brock Lesnar. Virtually taking away any doubt, any, of what's going to happen on Sunday. And then they really, that's a bummer. That's too bad that you have to go there. I mean, all Dana White had to say to that question is, well, we'll see what happens at WrestleMania. The door's open. But he may be the WWE Universal Champion, so I don't know. No, he didn't do that. He said, oh, yeah, no, we got him. He's signed, sealed, delivered. Thanks. You know, I mean, I don't know why that's necessary, Mike.
It really isn't, and that and this is just another thing, another example of how this is going to be a blah WrestleMania, and the fact of the matter is the last two WrestleManias, this one and the one that happened a couple of years ago, both were in New Orleans, were kind of duds, you know, are going to have been, was a dud, and probably will be a dud. Not the quality of the matches, just the storytelling and everything else that goes into it will be a dud. And you know, this is almost making me want to try and go and see if I can't get some scalp tickets to the ROH show that's going to be down there. You know.
Yeah, I mean, listen, ROH puts on a good show. No question about it. And I, more than that, though, and again, I've had a lot of fans come up to me and say, do you think it's possible that NXT TakeOver Saturday could in any way, shape, or form be better than WrestleMania? And my answer is yes, it very well could be. It very well could be. Nobody in the WWE has topped Almas and Gargano at the last one. Nobody has. And it's very unlikely they will. I'm not even sure AJ Styles and Nakamura will. I'm thinking probably not. But if you want an example of master storytelling, if you want an example of exactly when to use a risky move and when to just go with a normal move and when to build that momentum for the next big spot, you watch Almas versus Gargano at that last takeover. I was on the edge of my seat from about 3 minutes in. And even the timing of Gargano's wife jumping the barricade and taking down Almas's manager, everything was perfect. The timing was brilliant. The story was laid out perfectly. And I bought into the story 100%. I can't tell you how many times in that match I said, this is it. They're going home. No, they're not. Oh, this is it. This is the wrap-up. No, it isn't. I can't tell you how good the story was. It was a perfect story. And that is professional wrestling. And I realize that that's not for everyone. I realize that in the grand scheme of things, that's not going to be perhaps for 8-year-old, 9-year-old kids who want to wear a t-shirt and wave at a guy who's larger than life. I get that concept. But then I'm left with the question, is professional wrestling supposed to be for everyone? Like, let's say I'm in charge. Let's say I have the biggest label for heavy metal music in the world. Like Vince McMahon has the biggest forum for professional wrestling. And everybody I sign, for the most part, to my main label has to be commercial and pass a certain standard of metal. Oh, you can't say this. Oh, you can't dress this way. You can't look that way. You can't have a song called that. Your band can't be called this. It's all got to be kind of generically. And then I had a little underground label that was, you know, for the harder edged. Guess who the metal fans are going to like? Sometimes certain things aren't for everyone. Heavy metal is not for everyone. Hardcore rap is not for everyone. And if you try to make it for everyone, you water the product down until it really isn't for anyone. And I think the WWE has some danger of doing that. NXT is what WWE used to be. NXT is professional wrestling in the way that I remember it and I like it. But they feel that's too intrusive and edgy for the greater population. So they've come up with a watered-down version that only allows certain things. And when you do that watered-down version, it's often, you know, there's only so much water you can put in the Kool-Aid, Mike, before the Kool-Aid tastes like crap.
You're right on that. I'll take it one step further, and I'll say this. I'll say, if you would take NXT and put it on USA, I guarantee you the
Oh, boy, did we lose the phone lines? Todd, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I guess we just lost Mike. Todd, do you feel sometimes the WWE has watered themselves down too much for their own good?
Absolutely. They watered themselves down at times with their stuff.
Are you going to watch NXT?
I'm probably going to watch it probably Sunday morning or something.
Sunday
like
morning,
the replay
but
of
you
it.
Are going to watch it, yeah.
Yeah.
Are you an NXT fan?
I watch it once in a while.
Okay. So, see, this is the thing. For me, every single time I watch NXT TakeOver before a WWE big event, I feel as though TakeOver is the better show. I feel as though they set the bar for the pay-per-view. And I got to tell you that if I come across on Monday saying NXT was better than WrestleMania, then you have got to understand that the WWE has a problem. Because that nothing should be better than WrestleMania. Nothing. Doesn't matter. It does not matter who you have on your roster. It does not matter what you do in your matches. Nothing should top WrestleMania to your avid wrestling fan. Nothing. And if it does, it goes to show you have watered your product down far too much. Far too much. I think we got Mike back. We were talking about watering down that product, Mike, and that, you know, to an extent, I feel that's what they do.
Yeah, you're right on that. It is what they do. And look, I'll add one more thing about TakeOver. I'm going to almost guarantee you that even that Gargano-Ciampa match, unsanctioned match, is going to be almost a little bit better than what we're going to get on WrestleMania, because there's a story that they're trying to tell, and I've got that story. I know what that story is. I'm waiting on the edge of my seat to see how they're gonna, how they're gonna end up the story.
Right. It's exactly right. There's some master storytelling going on here. I mean, if you want to know my theory on what wrestling should be, then you go back to the last NXT TakeOver and you watch Gargano and Almas. Not only was that match itself, with no bells and whistles, brilliant and a masterpiece of storytelling and a masterpiece in athletic talent and prowess, but then they added the icing to the cake that after Gargano, who brilliantly sold, he was almost comatose. I mean, he's literally in the corner with his eyes rolling back in his head, doing a great job of selling that he is out of it. Went through a grueling match that saw his wife jump a rail, that saw him come so close to winning the belt, put him through a cavalcade of emotions. And he's walking up the rampway, acknowledging the fact that the crowd at least appreciated his efforts with his wife at his weakest moment by his former partner, who takes advantage of that weak moment. There's the icing on the cake. That's exactly the way wrestling is supposed to be manipulative to the fans, Mike.
Right. And of course, they threw into, if he loses, he's got to leave NXT and all that stuff, and it also helped the story that, well, the rumors were he's going to go to 205 Live and all that stuff. But then we get the other shoe drops, and they say, okay, there's going to be the unsanctioned match. If you win, Ciampa, he leaves. But if he wins, he's back, and he's back in the title hunt or something like that.
Right.
That's master storytelling.
It is, and that's exactly what fans want. So let's rate this SmackDown. Todd, let's go to you first. SmackDown this week.
Oh, I want to give like an A. It's like a little better this week for me.
Todd loved it. Okay, Todd gave it a straight A. How about you, Mike?
I'm going to go ahead and give it a B+.
Okay. I'm going to give it a C, only because I like the matches. I like the gimmicks they did. I wish they hadn't told so much of the story. I wish they didn't throw away Natty and Charlotte. I wish they didn't throw away Carmella. I wish they didn't throw away Rusev and Jinder Mahal, and they could have used it down the road. So for the things that they gave us, I think they overgave us to a certain extent. And because of that, I'm giving it a lower mark, but I did enjoy it. I enjoyed it a hell of a lot more than Raw, I can tell you that. Anyway, we'll be here Sunday with a massive WrestleMania pre-show, and we'll have all the latest news and our opinions and, of course, our picks on this year's big WrestleMania. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you Sunday.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio. WrestleChat Radio is a Savage Blade production.